XRNLP Laguna Niguel, Laguna Beach.
Oh God! You feel the metal?
You feel the metal? I'm right here.
This is Rock to Recovery Radio. I am your host, Wes Gear, flying by the seat of my pantalones. That is Spanish for pants, I think. No, I'm not sure. This is KX93.5 FM, Lugano's only FM, human crafted radio. This is a nonprofit radio station, by the way. If you want to make a donation and support what they do. Great programming, great community service here. You can go to kx935.com and support. And I'm your host, Wes Gear. And each week, well, the show's also brought to you by New Vista Behavioral Health. I want you to know that as well. They have great recovery programs out there if you're looking for help. So why am I here on something called Rock Recovery Radio? I'm a sober guy. I did not die. I'm passionate about helping people. And we're in a time and an age where we talk about recovery, mental health, addiction, all that stuff. Back in the old days, we're live on the air. Hold on. I'm talking here, buddy. In the old days, nobody talked about it. Now we talk about it. And in talking about it, in sharing our stories, others can be helped. They can find out that they're not alone. They can get answers. We share in not only the darkness, but the way out and getting into the light, getting into the vortex of radness. So each week we interview rock stars, celebs, actors, news anchors, pro surfers, or just, you know, super rad humans who've overcome deadly scenarios, you know? And our guest this week is no different. Super rad human, dear friend of mine, you're going to have to talk right into that mic, homie, and stellar musician, stellar human being, as I said. He's a guitar player of legendary punk band, OC punk band, D.I. Welcome to Rock to Recovery Radio, Mr. Clinton Calton.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Stoked to be here.
You should be.
With Wes.
Yeah.
Boss, homie, bandmate, mentor.
We have many. We wear many hats, don't we?
Yes.
We don't wear gay lover hats, though. No, and that'd be okay if we did, but we don't.
The TMI, no. I think so.
But we may wear many other hats. I'm just saying. So, Clinton, thank you for coming down
to the show. Oh, my pleasure, dude.
Yeah, it's always flying.
It wasn't even an order. It was, yeah.
No,
I was stoked. I was waiting. I felt like I was like the ringer for a while. Like, can you make it? And then, oh, wait, we got somebody cooler. So we don't need you now. I think I made it.
I think, there's a reference I'm going to make there. Anyhow, it's not coming to me, so we'll just keep moving.
All right, so move on.
So thank you for coming down and joining us on Rock to Recovery Radio, Clinton.
Dude.
For how long have you played in DI?
I could say that I am the longest standing guitar player in DI since 2001.
Since 2001?
So that's a long
yeah,
time.
Yeah, and you didn't die.
Did not die, actually, and or fall, sometimes falling, mostly standing.
Yeah, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I got recruited in the band to do a recording, some covers, actually, AC/DC and Weezer and a NoFX song for a Cleopatra release. Three releases, a song on each compilation record, and I went down to the studio. I hadn't seen Casey for many years.
Casey's the singer.
Casey Royer. And went down to the studio and recorded the songs, and Casey's like, hey, dude, you want to like do a gig? And I was like, totally, dude. And that's it. It's been like that ever since.
And it's been bunnies and rainbows ever since?
Yeah, kind of, yeah. Something
cool.
Like that.
Punk rock bunnies?
It's punk rock, yeah. I grew up listening to DI, so I kind of knew the songs. It was a dark spot for me at that point when I got the audition.
Yeah, why? You were sober then.
No, not when I got the audition.
You know what? Let's not tell that part of the story. Let's keep them wanting more.
I don't know if it was an audition, but it was more like, yeah, I guess it was.
Yeah,
recording. I didn't audition for the band. I just went down and did the recording.
Yeah, so usually in our show, we'll kind of go through somebody's journey, you know, what it was like, what happened, what it's like now.
I never really listened to the show, so I don't really.
That was a joke, everybody. He listens to it.
Yeah, I'm like glued to that show. I actually do have my alarm set, and I didn't want it to go off for like every Sunday, 9 p.m. It says, bam, bam, bam. Okay, listen to the show for like a couple of minutes.
Oh, just, yeah.
No, I'm listening.
Shit. All right.
I get.
All right. So Clinton, thank you for listening to the show. Tell me, where does your story start for you? Like you know, some people talk about their childhood, some people don't. Where would you start with you? Where did you know
about this moment? early on, you know, as far as you're talking, you know, when did I start?
When did you start? Well, you know, the story we're talking about recovery, a lot of people talk about, I knew at 5 years old that I just wasn't happy. A lot of people.
I hear a lot in meetings and in A or, you know, recovery in general, like I always felt different.
Was that your case?
No, I think I wanted to feel different. Oh. I was that kid.
You felt good? You felt connected?
No. I mean, I think I wanted to be different.
Mm.
I was the kid. I was on Romper Room. I don't know if I ever told you
that. You were?
Yeah. My mom.
That's really old, like, network TV show.
Yeah, the Magic Mirror. Remember that?
Yeah, Magic Mirror. I can see Johnny and Timmy.
I was that
and there's
kid.
Sandra,
yeah,
and there's
me.
Billy.
So I guess I was a child actor.
That was like creepy TV programming we had in the 70s for kids.
Yeah, for, you know, because we're only like 43, right? So
I'm 39 years
that's
old.
That's right. So I do got a couple of years on you. Mm-hmm. My mom said that I was, you know, a perfect child, I guess. No
really?
Trouble at all. Always singing. And I don't know what happened to that, but I'm still singing. I'm just not singing very well, I guess.
Your voice isn't bad. It's just not that great either.
That auto tune that I could, like, you know, implant in there somehow. That'd be rad. So I think I was in the MGM program when I was in elementary school.
What's that stand
for? The Mentally Gifted Minor.
Really?
So I guess I did
in
well.
In elementary school? Yeah. You wouldn't think the punk rock musicians
You wouldn't think so. But the reason I remember
stereotypically.
The reason I remember those experiences because I automatically felt like an outcast. Other kids would make fun of us because they thought like
so
we thought
So you were a nerd
we
at
cool.
first.
But I didn't really feel like one. But then we were put in this special class. So everybody's like, you're lame. You're like too cool or something.
Right.
So I felt isolated from the cool kids,
I guess.
Did
you have glasses?
No, I didn't have glasses until like.
Then you'd really be.
So I was like 25 or something. 27, I think, was the day.
So you're in mentally gifted classes?
I did well.
And kids were making fun of you?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
They disassociated a little bit?
A little bit, yeah. And.
What age did you start going into the MGM classes?
That was like fifth grade.
Fifth grade?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Fourth and fifth grade.
So people are old enough to take notice, like, hey.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I still have one of my friends, I think would might be my oldest friend from kindergarten. We were both in that class, and we laugh about it now.
Huh.
And
so it was
talk.
Pretty much normal all through then and mentally gifted
MGM
classes?
Well, then
classes?
My mom took me out of regular school. And I think if looking back, my dad passed away when I was 5, right when we moved out to California.
Do you remember being really bummed on that?
I remember being, I was thinking about this today, kind of thinking some memories about how, you know, what happened. I was only 5, right? So I'm obviously not emotionally ready for anything like that. But I do remember the call. It was late at night. My dad was a traveling salesman. And I remember my mom's reaction. And I don't remember, like, I just didn't know. And what I had talked to my mom and my sister, I think about a year ago about this. And what my sister and my mom had said, the first thing that I said, like, who's going to take me to Indian guides? Mm. Which is like the Indian version of Boy Scouts back in the day, right?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know. And it was so sad to hear my mom and my sister tell me that, you know. And my mom obviously was, you know, the whole thing. And she started working right away.
That was probably about as deep as you could get with it.
Yeah,
but I'm sure it wasn't just like a practical question. Well, who's taking me to India? It was probably like
heartbreaking. I mean, the way that my sister said it was like super sad. Like we were all crying when she said it.
Yeah.
I remember like we had just moved out there and it was a new tract up in Fullerton called the President Homes. Not like it was isolated, but it was a relatively new tract of homes. And a lot of the kids' parents rallied and like came around. I remember the dads would come and hang out with me and take me to Indian guides.
That's cool.
And do that. I remember those days a little bit. So going back early to those days, it started out where I felt a little different, and then I wanted to be different.
What do you think that means? What, wanting to be different? Did you want to be noticed? Do you want to stand
absolutely
out?
I okay. wanted to be that guy. As soon as seventh grade hit and sixth grade, I met this kid, and his dad was a professor part-time in Amsterdam. And his dad gave us a bunch of weed. That's when I learned how to roll a joint.
Seventh grade?
Sixth grade.
Sixth grade? That's early.
I was like, your dad is so cool.
And he gave
he lived up in Whittier. Gave weed. Us a bag of weed. Like, it was it, back in the day, it was like shake.
Can we just talk about that, though?
Yeah,
like, giving look, sixth graders?
I know. Looking back on that is just gnarly.
Right. It's one thing if a dad, like, maybe takes his son. Maybe, questionably. But let's say at 16. He takes his son and goes, son, let's do this together.
You're right.
That's but he just threw you a bag
of
weed.
On that,
he's like, here you go.
And they
kids.
Justified it because his mom was a professor. Well, they were both professors, and he was part-time Amsterdam guy.
So do me a favor. Cool. Step on that mic.
Sorry. Hello.
There you go. Yeah.
Looks like I have some reverb over here. Anyway, we're kind of going slow with this. We're still in sixth grade, but we got an
hour. We're doing all right. We're doing all right, buddy.
Guide me through. By seventh grade... Oh, I remember going out.
So you smoked weed. What was it like?
It was fucking awesome.
And so, and like...
I think it... if I can remember, we were up in Whittier, and we went out to some field, and he had this bag of weed, and he's like, here, roll a joint. And I didn't know how to do it, so I figured it out, kind of.
It's
and
not then, easy to do.
No, I became an expert really quick, though. Yeah. And especially with shake.
Right? Well, it's ready to go, yeah.
Falling out, and I don't think I maybe didn't get really high right away. It wasn't like, you know, kaboom, but then it was like, oh yeah, yeah.
So did you start seeking it a lot after that?
Yes, but I discovered alcohol too.
What age was that?
Right around sixth, seventh grade.
How were things with you and your mom? You're living with your mom.
Yeah, they were good up until the
people
day-
are gonna wonder what that. Yeah,
oh, sorry.
That's Clinton, that's if you're wondering.
Am I doing it a lot?
That was your third one.
Oh, okay.
But who's counting?
Three?
Yeah.
All right. I'm not too used to doing radio, so I'm like, okay, I'll get used to
it. I don't know
it.
If they on TV either. But.
Well, I don't do TV either. And usually when I'm putting up the band, it's everything's so loud and I don't have a mic. You can never hear it.
So if you go to a DI I'll show, you might just hear.
Yeah, I'm going to start doing that in the mic.
Okay, so.
Where are we?
We're talking about
seven
booze.
Yeah,
yeah, I was asking
okay,
you, like.
Yeah.
Things are cool with you and your mom. You smoked
well,
a little weed.
Up until, sixth grade, that's when I start. And then my friend gives me a pipe.
Sixth right? grade, you're like 12.
Yeah. And
that's young.
Yeah. And I get a pipe, right, which I thought was really cool. And my mom's doing my laundry. And she's like, Clinton, is this a pot pipe? She speaks more of like a Texas drawl of a bit. But,
it sounded English.
Yeah, it did. It
is this a pot
she's like,
pipe?
She's like, is this a pot pipe? I'm like, well, yeah. And then she's like, have you been smoking pot? You know, and that's when it kind of started.
No, I haven't been smoking pot. I just have a pipe.
I just
in
have
my,
a pot pipe.
In my pants.
And that's when I did it again. That's when I that's when I started doing my own laundry, I think. My mom would be like, I'd be like, it's cool, Mom. I'll do the laundry now.
Is that what happened out of that episode? Your mom, the hammer didn't come out. Your mom didn't do anything.
Well, yeah, she.
What? What'd she do?
I don't remember actually what she did, but she probably put me on restriction or something. And
is that what
figured
happened?
Out who did it? And yeah. then
did you fess up? Like, yeah, that's
oh,
my
yeah,
pot pipe.
Or,
I didn't know.
Yeah,
I didn't
what
know
am
that
I
got in there.
To say? I'm like, yeah. I'm
Every other person with drugs is like, I don't know how that got in there.
It was yeah. It
You're
was
wearing
just
Speedos. There's cocaine in your Speedos.
So my sister was. She was around. She wasn't, yeah. It was. I was caught. I just copped to it. From
yeah,
what
remember.
I remember, it was quite a long time ago.
When did you start drinking?
Right around that same time, too. I would start sneaking some
12,
alcohol.
13?
Yeah, my mom had a bar, which was really...
Is she a big drinker?
No, she would, looking back, kind of an everyday sipper, maybe. She would come home. She worked a lot. I mean, she... I got to give
everyday
it to,
sipper.
Got to give my hands off to her. Well, she started working. She was actually writing grants.
Okay.
For and I've hit her up for some advice on that. She's I don't remember. Or she doesn't want to remember. She
was there a beast.
She was writing grants for a nonprofit organization in Fullerton that the RSVP that got, it was the Retired Senior Volunteer Program. So she was working. And actually what was really kind of cool about those days, I remember, is her office was in the Fullerton Museum building. So I had access to the attic of the Fullerton Museum when I was a kid.
Well, that's cool.
It was like a movie. It was really cool up there.
And she's just a night sipper And well, she would come home.
She would come home and have like a Cutty Sark on the rocks and not even finish it, or a glass of sherry with dinner.
That's interesting that you noticed that.
Yeah.
At 12.
Well, I did, looking back.
Yeah.
But she wasn't like, I don't remember ever seeing her drunk.
Or schnockered.
Yeah, never schnockered, never out of control, very always in control. So that's where that started.
So what, so you started drinking about 13, and how did you start getting in trouble? How did that progress for you?
Yeah, I remember going, we used to live in Colorado, so we went back to our neighbor's friend's house, and I got hammered off those little Michelob. Remember those little mini beers?
The minis,
yeah. I was sneaking them upstairs in a box of cereal.
Okay.
I don't even know how I remember, but my mom's like, are you drunk? And I was like, I think so. Yeah. In front of the parents' party. And we were all drunk. It was me and my sister and their kids.
How old's that?
So my sister's 4 years older than me, and I was probably right, it was like sixth, seventh grade, something like that.
Sixth or seventh grade.
Yeah.
And you're drunk. That's pretty young.
Yeah, it was the first time. And I remember we went to this.
And your mom didn't get mad.
She wasn't mad, but she wasn't happy. Right. It was the first time she saw me drunk. I remember throwing up all the next day.
Now, what about your father? Was he a big drinker before he passed?
I hit my mom up. No, he wasn't. Him and his brothers, they were all like 6'4", super collegiate dudes, Auburn University, Texas gentleman type of dudes. He worked out. He was a boxer. And he had no episodes of being a drunk.
So you're sneaking booze at, you know, 6th, 7th grade. And then how did you drink a lot going into high school and stuff?
Yeah, after that, after I got over the initial shock of throwing up all day, I think it was at least 6 months to 8 months before I had another drink. And I was like, it'll be different this time. It'll be cool. I won't throw up. But it was still, you know, going into, I got arrested in seventh grade.
For what?
For the first time, too. For possession of pot. The first time I ever tried, the first drug deal gone bad in front of the whole school.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that was a...
So you tried to buy weed at school.
Mm-hmm.
See, now, back in the day, they kind of get mad. Now that's like...
Well, yeah, they call the cops.
I mean, it gets serious.
Yeah.
So what happened? The whole school saw you getting busted?
Yeah, it was pretty rad.
It was rad.
I actually got some street cred out of it,
Oh, really? Yeah, I could see
that. They cuffed me in front of the whole school and dragged me down. That's
probably how you got the DI
gig. It might have been. And ironically enough, we all went to the same junior high at different times.
Hey, aren't you the kid who got busted buying
by
weed?
By the coach. I won't call his name out, but we all know. Everybody hated the coach. And I was out in the field, of course, hanging out with the buttos, the FDT dudes. And the first one went awry. He totally saw the whole thing. He's like, what was that? And I threw it. It was in a film container.
Uh-huh.
And so they called the police, cuffed me.
Film containers, that's what we used to use.
Right? Yeah, right? And it was pretty hard to ditch it because there was nobody around, but I just threw it anyway. It's all clink, 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 clink.
And so you're in seventh grade?
Yeah.
And then what happened? Did you get kicked out of school?
I got suspended for a week.
I got kicked out of school for having weed. I got expelled.
Wow. And what?
I was at El Toro High School.
Okay.
I got expelled. We fought and everything. Didn't go well. So you only got suspended.
I got suspended for a week.
Which I think feel like if you're a kid, you love getting suspended.
Yeah, it was. I actually thought it was kind of cool, the whole thing, quite frankly.
You did, huh?
Yeah.
And you said you wanted to stand out. Now you're the guy who got...
The guys were in eighth grade, and they were like the bad dudes of the high school. So, but I didn't say anything. I held to my guns. I didn't give up the name. Even though they saw the whole thing, but I still, and I went back to school, and then like I figured they would like jump me in the bathroom or something, and nothing happened. They didn't say anything like that whole rest of the year, not one word.
Huh? So you're going to school kind of scared?
Oh yeah, I was super scared.
Yeah.
And then nobody would talk to me. I lost a bunch of friends.
Really?
And then they'd be like, "Who smells like weed on the bus?" And they'd look at me.
That they were kind of giving you a hard time, huh?
Yeah, a lot of the preppies or the cool kids shunned
you
me.
You had the Scarlet
with my
letter.
Led Zeppelin shirt on and my long hair.
Oh man,
got kicked out of guitar class
as a result.
No, that was just people were, cool thing that happened. And,
okay, all right. Wow, I think it's funny that everybody started like you're the guy. You're kind of like, I don't know how to explain it. You're infamous. You became
infamous.
Yeah. There's a kid. Oh,
I mean, and I didn't have a lot of friends anyway, but I had my core friends. But
Well, let's put in your song now, here, buddy.
Yeah, let's do
it. So it says OC Life.
Oh, let's do that one later.
Oh, is that what we're doing?
Because I thought we were going in order of like my first, the song that influenced me as a kid or what got me
into it. Let's see if I can move this around here. I got to do things.
Oh, maybe I sent it in a different order. I don't know. Remember what order I sent it in.
I don't know. Oh, you know what I could do is I can. There we go. I can play it backwards order. Okay, so we're going to Welcome to the Machine. What made you pick this song?
A couple of things. I was thinking about it because I was going to do the radio show like 6 months ago. I was like, what could I do? When I was young, Pink Floyd, I was a bit of a loner, I think, too, for a while. And I got a guitar that really, like, just opened up my whole world to me. I remember taking lessons at Fullerton Music. And I only had acoustic guitar for, like, 3 years. I never had an electric guitar for the first 2 or 3 years. I remember my mom bought me a guitar, and I got the Pink Floyd.
What was your first guitar?
What brand?
No, when did you get it?
Sixth grade. Right around there.
You got the weed going and the guitar going.
Happened at once. Like, bloom. Mm-hmm. And I got some Pink Floyd records, and it was Welcome to the Machine, I think, is such a rad song to me still because of the, you know, you bought a guitar to punish your mom. We were just talking about it.
Punish your mom.
Yeah, the lyrical content. You bought a guitar to punish your mom. Right. You were cool. You didn't like school, but you knew you're nobody's fool. What's that? It says some other cool
stuff. So you were latching on to the music?
Latching on to the, not only the lyrical content, but looking back, it was the first time these synthesizers and these mechanical noises in the intro just blew my mind. I listened to it with headphones high and just go, oh,
Pink Floyd's mind-blowing on the headphones.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
So here we are, Rock to Recovery Radio. This is Pink Floyd. Welcome to the Machine. We're talking to D.I., punk legend band, legendary band, Clinton Calton. Legendary. We'll be right back. Legend. We'll be right back. gotta love the Pink Floyd.
They were like sampling stuff way before the rappers did.
Oh man. I mean, they just take you on a journey. You put on the headphones.
Oh yeah.
You don't even need the weed or anything.
Not anymore.
I mean, we don't do that anymore.
Yeah, I still, you know, it's like a journey.
That's what they're doing when you get caught with the weed at school.
Clinton.
Look at him.
Look at him.
He got caught with the weed. This is Rock to Recovery Radio. I am your host, Wes Geer, here on KX93.5 FM.
That's right.
We're talking about recovery here, and we're here with the legendary punk band D.I., guitar player Clinton Calton, telling his story.
That's right.
How he felt. You felt pretty good. Your dad died at a young age. Didn't seem like he had a freak out over it.
Well, like I said, I didn't really understand it.
But some people in those situations, like, they're like, it destroyed me, you know. But it seemed like it, as sad as it would have been, you were very young. It doesn't seem to obviously have.
And I think the way that my mom had handled it, and socioeconomically, our situation didn't change. As far as we stayed in the house, my mom went to work.
You said the neighborhood rallied and took you to
that.
Indian
that
guides.
Really cool, yeah, and Boy Scouts and Pop Warner and.
So you, I was just recapping your story.
Right.
So you started smoking weed in 6th and 7th grade,
right?
And then you started drinking some. You stole some Michelobes.
Yep.
Started getting drunk on those. Your mom caught your weed pipe. I love how
pot
she
pipe.
Got
pot
the pot pipe in your pants. And so you're like, I'll be doing the laundry from now on, Mom. That's funny. The other moms would be
stripping on it too. Like, you're doing laundry now? I'm like, oh yeah, it's totally cool.
Oh, it wasn't an official announcement. You just kind of like.
Yeah, I think I remember there was a shift there.
Like, that's what we do.
Right.
That's what we
cover
do.
Cover the shit up, man.
Cover it up. And
stuff.
So. You started stealing booze. And what I'd like to point out, this part of the story, I think is very similar for a lot of us, which is in the beginning, it's working.
Right.
Even though you got caught at school like I did. So you could argue that it was an issue. But in the beginning, it's working.
It's working physically and mentally. Yeah.
Yeah.
The consequences are still there. And I had quite a few of them at a young age.
Yeah, so what were the next consequences that happened for you?
Yeah.
I mean, getting caught in school is pretty significant.
Yeah,
I don't
getting arrested in 7th grade. I went down to FPD, I remember that. So I was slated to go to, which I did, Fullerton High School, but my sister went to Troy. Now, Troy is the famous punk rock high school. That's where the Adolescents and D.I. Mike Ness and Casey were in the same class.
Oh.
And that's where a lot of that started. Eddie, the Tatter Brothers. And that was the punk rock high school because that's where it was going on, right? And that's where Social Distortion essentially started when they were going there. And but I went to Fullerton, and that's when I started taking acid by accident.
What age? And how do you take
Ninth
it by
grade.
Accident? How do you take acid by accident?
Well, I mean, I was out, of
Maybe
course, gravity. No, I went out to the field again at the new high school. This time I was a little bit more wiser, so I was watching out so I wouldn't get busted. Taking money from my mom to buy this stuff, by the way.
So you're stealing from your mother?
Stealing from my mom. My stepdad's coming into the picture at this point, too.
Hanging out in the bleachers in the back of the field. That's back where all the stoners are.
Exactly. If you know Fullerton High School, you know exactly where I'm talking about.
But every high school, I did it at El Toro High School. I did it at Esperanza High School.
Totally.
That's what you do, right?
Yeah, we would sneak up in the attic, actually.
Let's highlight this here. You were stealing money from your mom at this point. What, you're in 7th, 8th grade?
Yeah.
And, well, you're in high school now. So, yeah, 8th grade. Wait, no, 9th grade.
Yeah, we could, the 8th grade was, I guess, somewhat uneventful,
school you're stealing.
Yeah, that was when my mom met my stepdad, who's still around.
How'd you take to that?
Not very well. We met him up at Mount Baldy skiing, and I was like, who is this dude?
Oh, and your mom, there he was making moves on your mom?
Oh, yeah. I knew it. He picked us up. Well, my sister was hitching a ride, which wasn't a very far ride, up at the parking lot of Mount Baldy, if you've ever been there. The mm-hmm. parking lot used to be, like, really hard to get up there. So this guy pulls up in a van, and I'm, of course, we started skiing at a young age with me and my mom and our next-door neighbor family. We'd always go skiing. And this guy's, like, giving my mom and my sister a ride. I'm like, who is this dude?
instantly you're kind of territorial. Huh?
Yeah, oh, totally. And just, well, yeah. And then I see him skiing together like an hour later, so I spray him. And then we go out to dinner. And
well,
then,
you were a shredding skier.
I was, yeah, I took to it really quickly. I loved skiing.
So you sprayed him.
I went by and sprayed him. It was cool. And then we go out to dinner, and I'm like, this is not going well.
So they were getting cuddly, kind of?
Seemed like it.
And you didn't like it?
No, not at all. I just didn't. It was, I guess, territorial, too. I just didn't want anybody in my scene. And my mom had dated a couple guys during that point before she remarried. I remember one of the guys was our neighbor, so to speak. I remember he had, like, everybody seemed to have bars in their house back in the day when I was growing up. You know, just cocked, hey, you want a drink? Yeah, sure. What I remember about him is he was a realtor. I remember he had this really cool Cadillac, an Elder, like, what do you call the big ones?
Fleetwood. Maybe Eldorado.
And he had this sticker on the back of his car that said, Easy Does It.
Yeah.
On disco tape. Remember when disco tape was big?
You mean like the glittery stuff?
Yeah, it was kind of a prism-y stuff.
Yeah, prism. Yeah. And they put the black ink over the top of the prism, and the letters are the prism part.
I thought that sticker meant like if you were driving too close to the car to back off. Like, easy does it, dude. Get away from my Fleetwood.
Yeah, I didn't know.
It wasn't until 20 years later that it literally made me remember that day. Like, he was in and out because he was drinking.
Right,
struggling.
Or maybe Easy Does It was used for more than one thing than just recovery.
Maybe.
Yeah, but I yeah.
So my stepdad comes into the picture. I'm not digging it, and they're still together.
They're still together.
Yeah, married, and I consider him to be my dad, and he's a great dude. Cool. I call him probably once a week, minimum.
Okay.
He's not big on texting.
Well, those older generations. You know?
Well, I'm training him a little bit. He's getting better because, you know, he started texting and then he's like, why didn't you text me back? I'm all, dude, we're like, okay, we've already texted like 10 times. You don't go like, okay, we're done. Okay.
Right.
See you later. Talk to you later. Period. Okay. Over and out. Okay.
You have to hang up on the text. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to stop texting now. So where does it go from there? Your mom has
high
a
school
boyfriend. Yeah. How? Well, yes.
Yeah.
When does it, you said there's a lot of stuff that was, repercussions you're having. What was some of the stuff?
Well,
you bought the acid. You're doing acid at high
school. I went out to smoke it to get a J, a doobie, and the guy's like, here, try this. $2.
You're like, I don't need to know what it is. It's a bargain.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
I'm like, what is it? You know, it's acid. I'm like,
$2. You're like,
so I'm like, well, he goes, trust me, it's going to be cool. It's going to be rad. I'm like, okay, cool.
He doesn't care. He just wanted your $2.
I never saw that guy again. If I did, I don't recognize him. And so I had guitar class with my buddy who was a senior. I was a freshman, and he knew how to play like every Led Zeppelin song in the book. Kenny, I'll never forget him. He was rad. So I didn't tell him. This is like a Cheech and Chong movie, like for real. I didn't tell him that I bought the acid, right? But we were kind of hanging out smoking weed, and I'd go to his house and play Led Zeppelin songs. He's way better than me. He had like a 78 studio, Les Paul was rad. And he's like, here, just take this. You'll be cool. And so I go to first period, and
he took it in the morning.
Yeah, this is like 7:30, 7 in the morning, you know, right before first period or whatever
and
time
so
it was.
So you're, what, 13, 14?
14, yeah.
Okay.
And I come out and I see the guy because it didn't come on for like an hour, I guess, from what I remember. I'm like, dude, this is bunk. I want my money back or something. You know, like, what's going on with this shit, this acid thing? And he's like, talk to me after next period. And if you don't like it, I'll give you your money back or whatever. I never saw that guy again. Who knows? And it started coming on and it was just like a movie. The wall was melting and my teacher's like, is everything okay? I'm like, I'm not feeling really that good in his face. And so then I go to guitar class, and then I see my friend in guitar class. This is at Fullerton High School, by the way. And I was like, he's like, dude, what is wrong with you? I'm like, dude, I took some acid. He's like, why didn't you tell me? It was like, remember the Cheech and Chong part when he takes the acid?
It's hard to, I took a lot of mushrooms and went to high school. It's hard to function when you're that young and that high.
And also, I'm already on academic probation, so I have to report to the truant officer every day. And I was already forging my signatures, right? So we all knew the truant officer by name. I can't remember his name, but he was just kind of like out of a movie, too. This tall dude with glasses. Mm-hmm. And so my friends all, dude, just chill and like hang out in guitar class for like two periods, right? Until you can like figure out what you're gonna do, because I was like, dude, I don't know, man. I think I'm gonna lose my mind.
Yeah,
sure. He's like, it's gonna be cool. Just jam. Be cool. And there was these little ISO booths in there at Fullerton High School where you could play guitar for an hour. It was really cool. And then he comes back. From what I remember, he comes back and he's like, yeah, dude, fucking what's his name knows that you're not in class. He's looking for you. So automatic, super paranoid. And he's like, here's what you do, dude.
The truant guy.
Yeah. Apparently, he's like hunting me down at school or something. Which was probably not even a big deal.
You're on
anyway.
Academic probation.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like a legit scare.
And if he finds you ditching class and you're high.
Yeah, and I'm just flying for the first time, by the way. And so he's all, here, dude. And he just like gives me like $5. He's all, go to the arcade and first go to Taco Bell and buy a couple of burritos, go to the arcade and just hide out there for like 3 hours and then sneak on the bus and go home. I was like, well, that sounds like a pretty good plan. So I go to the arcade. I'm just like freaking out. Like it was kind of cool. But you know, if you've done it, it's like it goes from being cool to like really bad, like within a minute.
Yeah.
And then back.
Yeah.
So I'm sneaking on the bus to go home, and I get home and I was freaking out. My mom worked kind of evenings, nights. So anyway, I was like, well, I'll just like shut the shades and put on the wall. That'll make me feel mellow with my headphones. And it just put me into this really like then skulls. It's all, down the wall. I'm like, this is the worst idea ever.
Yeah. Things will start happening. Yeah. So you went on that. How did that end?
I had to call my friend. I called it out an SOS. So I was like, dude, I'm freaking out. I think I'm going to die. And he's like, come over. And we smoked a bunch of homegrown. And then I came down.
I don't care it.
And then I went home and snuck home right before my mom got home, jumped into bed, turned off the lights. And my mom comes in. It's like 8 o'clock at night. And she's like, why weren't you in school today? I'm like, oh, mom, I just, why didn't you call? I'm like, I just came home. This is before cell phones. I'm like, I just felt really sick. I just bailed and came home. I'm home. I've been home all day. She's like, okay.
Right. Got away with that one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Punk rock boy does acid. So, yeah. Did you get in trouble?
Oh, yeah. I was stealing, and my stepdad, by the way, was a pilot in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And he was really cool. He never was physical with me. But at that point, they're like, if you don't get your shit together, if you don't get it together, we're going to send you to military school. So they did. And I went to a military reform school in Stanton for a year and a half.
So you were stealing from your mom. Did she ever know you were?
Yeah, she caught. She figured
it out. And then you
were
ditching school, the truant officer. You're
all
doing
the above. They
know you're drinking and doing drugs and
all
that.
Yeah, they knew what was up.
So the hammer came down, and they shipped you off to a military school.
I took the bus for 2 hours a day to Stanton from Fullerton.
Gotcha.
Which seemed like an eternity.
Sure.
Oh, it was brutal.
And how did it go for you in there?
We could spend the rest of the show in that, but we're not. But it was corporal punishment. It was bad. But I did learn a lot. And what happened was I think I learned how to put on an act, because I became a different person in that school.
Just to make people happy.
Absolutely. Yeah. I came out, I was getting good grades. I cut my hair, got a job. And I was following the rules. But underneath, I was a delinquent. Ended up going to Sonora Public School. Had a great year there. Partying my ass off. But I can say that. Partying a lot. And did well in school. Got a job at Albertsons as a box boy. And everything was pretty good at that point.
And what happened? Well, I think, you know, it's good that you point out that you're just like wearing a mask and putting on a show.
Yeah,
a lot of people
absolutely.
Do that. A lot of kids do that, right? Got to make people happy or get the heat off, or somebody in a marriage that's getting a little rocky. They do what it takes to get the heat off.
Totally.
Knowing deep down inside, it's only a matter of time till I go do what I want to really do.
Yeah. And I was pulling it off.
Yeah. So when did it go bad? How did you get to, you know, your bottom and all that?
Well, I just kept drinking and drinking and drinking. And I think whether it was like the whole nature.
Drinking become daily?
Oh yeah, it was on from junior high. Well, from high school to when I got sober, it was on every day.
So high school, you're drinking daily.
Absolutely, and I think I can pinpoint when it happened is that I got a job at the pizza place across the street, right, in my neighborhood, and what had happened is the owner had died, and
pizza's kind of code for beer, isn't it? In a way,
kind of.
You know what I mean?
It was an interesting situation. There. What had happened was the bummer is that the guy, it was Lydia's Pizza. He was this old Italian dude. And we ate there like every day. It was the only place. It was the closest place and it was good. So the guy, my next door neighbor had the job and he started going to college. So he gave me the job. Mm-hmm. Right at that time, the old guy died and literally his nephew from Italy and his wife and son came over and took over the place. Now, what had happened is that in Italy, there is no drinking age. So one day he's like, you want a beer? I'm like, totally, dude. And then one day I was like, well, could I like buy a beer? He's like, you didn't get it from me, you know? Mm-hmm. And then my friends would pick me up from school because I never had a car until my mom wouldn't let me get my driver's license until I was 17 and a half. And, I was like, they're like, where'd you get the beer? I'm like, from my boss, but it's, you know, it's kind of on the DL. They're like, get a case. I'm like, I don't know, dude. So I hit him up. He's like, you didn't get it from me, you know.
So you had a hookup, and that's and ever since
that day
those
on, for 25 years, I was drinking every day.
Wow. And so what? How do you hit bottom? You didn't get the DI gig until after you're sober, or you're?
No, it was towards the end.
Towards the end of your using.
Yeah, and this is a long time between that, but it just kept getting worse and worse. And I would always seek out jobs. So I'm living at home, and I'm going to Fullerton College. I want to be an architect and a musician, and I figure out that I can get a fake ID, so I'm drinking. And pretty soon I'm drinking more than I'm going to class.
Yeah.
And then my mom kicks me out, and then I'm working at Black Angus. I'm like, well, I'll just, like, you know, get a job as a waiter because you can drink and, like, be cool. And I'm struggling in bands. I'm in a band with a guy that I met in high school, Dan, and he's like still a phenomenal guitar player. He taught me a lot, and we were trying to make it, you know, and we just couldn't. I thought that we had the talent maybe, but we didn't really have much of direction. We were just partying all the time.
Yeah, and so what was it feeling like leading up to like those final days of
taking it easy? The final days were towards... I was working at Guitar Center. I had a girlfriend. She kicked me out because I was drinking too much. She said, like, quit playing guitar and drinking so much. So I would just leave. I remember, like, taking her car and just leaving, even though she kind of gave it to me. But I was like, thanks for the car.
See you later.
And I ended up moving into her best friend's dad's house. This guy he's super cool. That's where that was the last place I lived before I went to rehab. He actually is this peg leg scientist, dude. He's so cool. And, he was like an everyday drinker, but he somehow managed to keep it together. My drinking got more severe. I was working at Guitar Center at this time.
How did it get more severe? You're drinking every day. What was more severe about it?
You know, I blew it at the Christmas party, which was kind of a common thing for me to do. But then I'm drinking more at like 3 o'clock in the morning, waking up.
Can't even get through
the
night.
Put a fridge in my room in the closet.
So you're having DTs in the night.
Yeah, it went from like a 6-pack to a 12-pack to like an 18-pack.
Yeah.
Right.
And you're getting kicked out of everywhere you go.
Yeah, I couldn't hold a relationship. I couldn't hold a job. I couldn't hold a band, yeah. You know.
DI was like, well, we're cool.
No, this is before, but that's when I met you. I was in Rooster.
Right.
Right. And you were practicing down at Slater with Ted P.E. Remember the day you guys got signed and showed up in the semi with the purple anvil cases and stuff? I'm like, what, this West dude's so cool. And we weren't hanging out much. And that's when the Rooster thing kind of went south.
Yeah.
And that was an exciting time, even though nothing happened for us. And back in the day, I really didn't even care about that. I was like, I just want some free bases and like to go to Germany or something. I'm like, I don't care.
So what was the final bottom? What brought you down?
Well, I get in DI and I immediately call my bro Eddie to recruit him into the band, because the band lineup at the time, to me, wasn't where I had pictured it being. But that's another story. But I was like, if we need a bass player, maybe I can get Eddie. Eddie had, I met him many years ago. He got busted and he got sober. So our relationship was kind of strained. And he started playing in DI. And instead of things getting better for us, things got way worse for me. I started having seizures. I was drinking all, because all of a sudden I went, I remember the week before I got in DI, I had an audition for this band that ended up getting a gold record, and I blew it. I had to drink before I went to the audition. Mm. It wasn't that bad, but I could still think of now that I probably smelled like beer. I was drinking beer in the parking lot, like before I went in.
Well, when you're drinking that much, though, you had to drink just to not have a seizure. So exactly. You were already drunk you drank.
Probably. I mean, looking back on it, I was probably
blood
just,
alcohol
it was coming out of my pores. Yeah. You know, I was like mouthwash and some like before Axe, but whatever I had, like cologne, mm-hmm. You know, going in there like, hey, dudes.
So what happened? So you're having seizures.
Yeah.
And how'd you end up in rehab?
I went to practice one day with DI, and it was about, we practiced up in Fullerton. We had our own studio for many years, about 7 o'clock. And I just slam a six pack before I go to practice on an empty stomach. I had a seizure at practice, and they're like, dude, what is going on? I couldn't even play my guitar. I remember having this feeling of like short circuiting. My fingers would not work. And before I blew it off, but for whatever reason on this day, it was just seemed like everything was over. I had like no, hopeless.
You're hopeless.
Yeah, I was just like, it was over. And I was like, I can't even play guitar anymore. And they're like, dude, you need to go to rehab. A couple guys at that time were in.
What year is this?
Sober. It's 2001.
2001. That's early in the rehab days.
Yeah. And they said, one of the guys was like,
where'd you go?
The Blue House.
Blue House.
He's like, I can get you into the Blue House on a scholarship. I'm like, well, why don't we wait till like next week?
Right.
Because we got some gigs this weekend. You know, let's just wait it out. And he's like, okay. So I ended up checking in August 17th of 2004.
And you've been sober ever since.
I'm sober ever since that day.
Okay, so we're going to throw in the song. And then when we're done, we're going to just come back and finish up with like the radness of your life now.
Yeah, we're gonna jump right into the fast forward.
So why did you pick this song?
I picked OC Life, and this is our version of the original, which was written by Rick on his record, and then DI recorded it with Casey. It, to me, it epitomizes the coolness of why when I first heard DI, I was like, oh, who is that? Even though they were from my neighborhood, they were seemed I didn't know them. And it just epitomizes Orange County punk rock to me. And to be able to be in the band now and think about those times. And the band got me sober.
Rock You Cut Radio here with Clinton from DI.
OC Life is not the life for me. rock and roll.
Rock and roll.
PR 101 right there.
Takes me back.
Takes me back, man. Right back to Fullerton.
Rock to Recovery Rock Radio. I am your host, Wes Geer. This is KX93.5 FM, Laguna's only FM. Human Crafted Radio. This show is also brought to you by New Vista Behavioral Health. We're here talking about the journey of punk legend guitar player. I don't ever
by
know
default,
what
you I guess.
Legendary punk band DI guitar player Clinton Calton. He's talking about his journey.
Drinking all since high school daily, and
you were having seizures.
Yeah.
You're playing in DI, you're having seizures, and then you decided to go to the Blue House and you got sober.
Somebody decided. The band decided.
They kind of pulled them into.
It was an intervention. For
you know
sure.
what that? You know what? That is cool because that's a punk rock
it
intervention.
It is so rad. Yeah, it was so crazy. I had so many seizures that gave me the nickname Rocket Man.
I mean, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Seizures are potentially deadly. You're drinking
yeah,
so much.
I don't care about that at the time.
Right, but I'm just. To the people
yeah,
listening
I mean,
at home.
People, yeah, I didn't do any research on that. But
so for other people who maybe shoot dope or do pills or whatever, it's like that. Those things, we don't care. We're having these symptoms that show we're near death.
Totally.
And we don't care. So you go to the Blue House.
138 pounds.
At that time.
65 now, so.
You're a tall drink of water.
Yeah, tall drink of something back then. Yeah.
I'm just kidding. So you went to the Blue House and you stayed sober from that day on. What was key to you getting and staying sober since you really didn't even sound like you really wanted to?
No, I had no intention of staying sober. I had my guitar. And we've talked about this. I've heard you talk about it in rehab. I decided to relearn. I literally couldn't play anymore. I went from like a shredding guitar player to like I couldn't even sound like I was out of tune all the time. So I decided I was like, for one, I was going to spend my time in rehab relearning my craft. What was the question?
The question is, how'd you stay sober?
Oh, how did I stay sober?
How do you go from a guy who doesn't care?
Am I that guy? Or yeah?
You tell me. You're very.
I love being till this day, especially today when I woke up. It was a rad day, but just because we talked about that.
What was the key?
The key was, I think I went from like. I felt so good physically and mentally. I just wanted to keep that going.
You did?
I didn't breathe a sober breath for 20 years. I was literally high on life.
So you didn't hate how you felt when you first got sober?
No. I felt so relieved.
Huh.
I mean, apparently I was shaking and baking for about a week. So I don't really remember that part.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like coming out of a haze. I mean, they've literally said they created a monster when they got me sober, but
there's a lot of people who are going to be pissed because they're like, man, I hate trying to get sober. For you, just seems like it was pretty easy.
I don't know about easy, but I think the shift happened. It felt like I came out of a slumber.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, quite literally. And physically, it was like just to wake up and not throw up and have a seizure was pretty cool.
I'd say. Hey, guys, right. I didn't barf and have a seizure today.
I mean, I've heard many stories about me just throwing up in regular conversation or some girl's shoes or something or in the planter or something like that at a restaurant. I mean, leaving Las Vegas is not a comedy to me. I mean, when I saw that, it was like pretty gnarly.
I could relate, too.
Yeah.
So what would you say to somebody out there who's struggling? What suggestions would you give them?
Wait till the miracle happens. You see all these, you know, or hear these things that are, you know, in AA and these sayings, but I literally just kind of kept going. I thought maybe I can get another day. Maybe I can get a week. I took my 14-year chip in the same room, practically the same seat I sat in for the very first time.
So just small goals.
Till this day, it's kind of a one day at a time thing. We've talked about this, and I got my job at Rock to Recovery from my home group.
Yeah.
I mean, the things that you can accomplish and do, I never even dreamed of. We're just talking about what we're going to be maybe doing abroad with the Air Force, and I get all these opportunities to do things, but it's still that feeling that the physical obsession and especially the mental obsession had been lifted. And I didn't believe that could happen. But when it did, I wanted to keep that.
There you go. And now the exciting thing is finally, after years and years and years, DI is going to do some Europe festivals. Eh?
Yeah, we don't have the passport in hand yet, but...
But it's looking good.
It's looking good, yeah. And
Casey's passport.
Yes, Casey's passport, which is a result of all the lifestyles that we used to live and those repercussions. You never know, 20 years ago, that we'd be huge in Japan and Europe right now. That it's like this explosion of punk rock over there.
That's so cool.
It has been, but it's even bigger now. And we have an opportunity to go over there and hang 10 in East Berlin, so to speak.
Amazing. Well, thanks for coming down.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Glad you live. Glad you're not barfing, having seizures anymore. And I'm so stoked
too.
That DI...
We work together. We play together.
Yeah. I'm so stoked that DI gets to do what you guys are going to do this summer.
Einstein.
So this has been Rock to Recovery Radio. Right. I'm your host, Wes Geer. We've been here with Clinton Calton of Punk Legends DI. Check him out this summer in Europe and out there when they're playing. And if you're out there and you're struggling, don't give up.
Don't give up.
There is absolutely...
If I can do it, you can do it.
There's absolutely a way out. There's people that would love to help you. And... just let somebody know you need some help.
Free bird.
All right. Have a good night.